Buddy,
Hello.
you're alive. I'm alive. Everybody is alive, technically, on some level.
Well, it depends on how you define alive.
We're gonna get into it. That's a good set the stage question for checking in on the Ottawa Senators. It's been like a month since we recorded,
Yeah.
and not much has happened.
Really, I would say the tone has shifted since the last time.
There's been a whiff of the zeitgeist.
Tone's shifted
So
from
last time we checked in, it was like, is Zach Smith gonna get to 20 goals ever again? And now it's like, okay, let's just start by taking stock.
I think the last time we talked, the theme was we got Matt Duchene, that whips ass.
That's right, actually. We were like, we got the most sought after scoring forward in the league. Yeah, we gave up a pick, but it's protected. Like, who cares? We gave up Shane Bowers. It's like tourists, like mecca tourists. There's no
Tourist
way this is gonna backfire.
isn't going to go point a game or anything when he goes over to Nashville.
Think we were like, man, Nashville taking a huge amount of risk. On this play, really, just and Colorado, just getting a bunch of lottery tickets. Ottawa is the only team in that trade who got a sure thing. That was where we left off. That's a refreshing taste of being 100% right.
Oh, as usual.
So since that time, there's been a grassroots revolution against the owner. There's
Well,
been,
hold on. Can I jump in here for a
yeah.
second? Can I explore the space?
Get cooking.
Like, I want to tell you a little story.
Okay.
Now, you know me. We are friends. I'd say that's
I like any story that starts with, you know me, we are friends.
like
I'm already there.
I consider us friends,
Yeah.
right?
We know each
Yeah.
other for like 15 years. Yeah.
Look, I don't like gridiron football, right?
That's the one thing everyone knows about you.
I don't follow it, okay? I grew up playing it when I was a little pupper, but I do not have a World League of American Football, or, well, I guess I consider myself a Red Black supporter. I'm extremely in favor of them because they're my hometown team, right?
Yeah, you're a game day player.
But, I don't follow the NFL because I don't know if you've noticed this theme on Twitter or just in your life or whatever, but I've noticed that every
Follow our new business, by the way, twitterinyourlife.com.
Tuner in your life dot, well, we got dot ca, but
Fuck.
we'll talk about that later. But yeah, everyone I know, whether in real life or on the internet, seems to follow NFL football, is obsessed with it. And they all have this cloud over them of like, my life is hell. Like, I love NFL football and I love Team X, and my life's hell, and constant, like, this is a never ending cloud of despair over my head. And like the other day, I was walking down the street, that's right, and as a free man, and I saw a young man walk by with a Buffalo Bills hat on, and no disrespect to the Buffalo Bills, but if I know one thing about the Buffalo Bills, is that the thing they're most known for is that they made it to the Super Bowl like 4 seasons in a row and didn't win, And that's a team that a lot of people around here like because it's like geographically the closest.
Right.
And I see a guy like that and I'm like, bro, you signed up for hell. You signed up for more hell in your life,
You basically decided to be like a monk without a promise of heaven at any point.
Yeah. But you know what? That's been my thinking for a long time. That's why I don't really follow gridiron football. And, you know, if you do, you know, more power to you, I guess, unless you're a Redskins fan, stop saying that name out loud, please. But I was wrong. I was wrong, Verratta. Being the fan of your favorite sports home team is actually the true hell that being a football fan of another team or whatever sport that you've signed up for is nowhere near being an Ottawa Senators fan right now.
When maybe they fall off a cliff.
So what if I were to tell you that the team went on a 3-week, to be generous about it, it was really kind of longer than that. Three-week road trip because there was a fucking curling tournament at the stadium.
We got to check in with those people who I noticed during the curling tournament, the shots of empty seats.
Oh, don't even, I didn't even think about this.
Well, there's the whole level of like our team basically went into exile for 3 weeks so that this like ill-attended curling thing could, but I'm not going to pretend I can get into like the economics of curling and what it takes to sell a curling ticket. Like, I don't know, like more power to curling and everyone who likes curling and, you know, that's fine. But the thing that came to me was, what is this like fascinating subculture on Twitter of like shots of empty seats? And
wait, well, here's the thing. I don't know much about, you know, curling, you know, that's like,
but that's what those close to the sport call it.
I know that there is the Scott Tournament of Hearts or whatever, right? Uh-huh. I've watched TSN my whole life. I know about these commercials.
Great and Constantine's then, record.
And then there's the, yeah. And then there's the Briar Tournament, right?
Uh-huh.
Aren't those the big, this wasn't even fucking that. This was called Roar of the Rings. Yeah. I don't even know. Is that real? Like, the team got kicked out of their own stadium for 3 weeks for something that could have kicked the motherfucking Ottawa 67s out of their fuck. I'm so upset about this.
Yeah, I don't want to be condescending to curling, but I
shout
really
out to Rachel Holman.
I mean,
on Twitter, please.
My impression of curling has always been like, okay, the absolutely dominant like Canadian teams are, you know, like the guy who led the absolutely dominant Canadian team is now playing in like a town that is obsessed with curling in an arena in front of like, I don't know, maybe charitably 1,000 people. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I guess that makes sense. Like curling translates into this really intimate sport. And then, you know, they next thing you know, they're booking an 18,500 capacity hockey arena in the countryside outside of Ottawa. So, hey,
you know, it's, you know, it's intimate Robert Goethe Arena.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just starting. This is going to be, a podcast. So you got this.
I'm just gonna update our cloud storage. Go ahead.
Great. Verratta, fan of Ottawa Senators, I'm selling you 3-week road trip for not even the curling tournament. So what happens? Well, what if I were to tell you that your favorite hockey team picks up 3 of 22 fucking points that are on the table? I'd say that's like, you know, outscored 43-16 in that stretch.
Discouraging.
A lot of, you know, 5-0 games. So, you know, you got all kinds of storylines here, you know, just to make it, you know, you have 3 points in 22 games. You're outscored by almost 30 goals or 25 goals in that stretch. And, you know, you're going to have some storylines to go along with a run that bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like Duchesne, despite, you know, playing well, not really putting up any points. Meanwhile, Suris is just, like, putting up a point in every game for Nashville Predators, right? Like, that's a little insult to injury. Mm-hmm. You got Carlson clearly not looking himself, I heard that he's, you know, whether you subscribe to plus minus as a valid stat, certainly troubling to look at.
Yeah, he looks like he's got a stiff heel of some kind. I don't know. Something like that. There was a stretch there where we'd become so accustomed to him just like completely being a graceful, magnificent elk.
And, yeah.
Like he looked like a very, very good human being instead. And it was enough to like, it was like seeing like a flash of yourself in a reflection where you look like an older man and you're like, oh my God, we're all mortal. It was enough to put a damper on things.
And I mentioned Duchesne and I mentioned Carlson, and I don't want to single them out because, yeah, when you got like a streak of, you know, 5-0 games, that's the entire team's offense drying up completely. I was watching this one game and one of the announcers was like, you know, they got to get Thomas Chabot out there on that power play to get things going. And I'm like, your power play options are, you know, Erik fucking Karlsson.
Who's going to play the full 2 minutes?
Bobby Ryan, Mark Stone, Mike Hoffman, Matt Duchesne, you know, you can, like.
Broussard.
But Broussard out there. Like, these guys are not, that's not enough talent. Like, you got to get a 20-year-old, like, to take some slap shots that Erik Karlsson's apparently not taking. Like, come on, man. The offense is drying up. But, you know, at least the goaltending's been horrible. Like, they're not – the offense isn't bailing out the goaltending, and the goaltending's not bailing out the offense.
Yeah, this is what – throughout the whole losing streak, I was kind of – I mean, there were some games where they sucked. Like, it was – nothing was working. They were clearly not playing well. They could not get out of their own zone. Every time – Phaneuf and CC were on the ice, they were getting completely caved in. But there were plenty of games where they were losing like 5-4, and then the next game they were losing 2-0, where, you know, they would score goals and their goaltending, the bottom would fall out on it, or they would not be able to score goals and Craig Anderson would turn in like 37 saves. That's just the coins flipping the wrong way for you. You know, there's a point at which, like, you just need things to go your way, and nothing was going their way. You know, I would be charitable about the losing streak and say at least half of that was bad luck, and the other half was them being terrible. I think it should have been like a 500 team over that stretch.
I think that's a great point. It's really hard to explain. And you know what happens when a team's poor performance is really hard to explain? You start talking about the coach getting fired because that's all you have left to talk about.
That's my question for you, though, because people went to Boucher getting fired, like, in my view, really fucking quickly.
What? Ottawa Senators fans?
I mean, at this point, I thought we had reached, like, you know, in 2001 where he's at the end of the light tunnel and he's in like a bedroom with the monolith. Like, we fired so many coaches. I thought we were like, we were post coach at this point. Like, Boucher is not a coach. He's just an acolyte of the system. Like, the system is the monolith and he's just a monkey. Right. At this point, I thought we had finally found a coach where we could be like, yeah, it's not about coaching anymore. It's about being a team that finds a way to eke out wins with like an older lineup and a little bit of a smaller payroll. And I was really surprised. Like, if you fire Boucher, who the fuck do you go to next? Yes. Like, yes. We had McLean and we had Cameron, both of whom were like, yeah, we're going to play Carlson 30 minutes a night. McLean was like, I'm going to put my offensive forwards out there and we're not going to play defense at all. And so I've been really surprised by, well, as far as I can tell, people are most pissed off about the fact and I want to get your take on this. Boucher's line combinations. And, you know, you were talking about the power play. There's definitely been some like weirdness where, you know, he's running out his favorite players. I don't begrudge a coach the, like, his,
decision to occasionally, you know, roll out a depth, you know, system player more so than you might like. Boucher does seem to be like fucking pushing it a little bit, maybe like scratching Claesson repeatedly. Seems like he's like trying to, I'm seeing people tweet about line combinations for practice where Hoffman, your scoring winger, is in the top six. And they're like, this is a great idea. And you're like, this is weird that we're this far into the losing streak and we haven't tried playing our scoring winger in the top six.
Well, and to your point about like, where do we go from here is like, Boucher, I think when you're just getting lifeless performances on this, you know, Cormac McCarthy style death march through the desert road trip, shit's gonna get weird. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's almost like a there but for the grace of God go. Like, be like, I don't know, Nate Thompson on the power play, let's do this. Like, let's see if any, like, he's feeling lucky today or whatever, you know. But yeah, and the thing is Boucher is not like Paul McLean, like, yes, we beat that hated Habs in the first round, that was pretty awesome, you know, or Dave Cameron, like, I went to church today, so we're going to win our, like, 17th game in a row, and, like, it keeps, you know, Hamburglar run thing.
Right, right.
This guy came in and, like, you know, like, got us to the Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. Like, that is a... that's a flex move. That is the, that's like, they haven't been that far in, you know, over a decade now, or I guess exactly a decade, which, you know, let's not split hairs. That is a long fucking time.
Yeah. And I thought it bought him a little bit of goodwill.
Exactly. When that happened, when they got eliminated, I thought, well, you know what? At least we're sticking through some tough times that might come up with this coach. Because he's kind of like, he proved himself pretty quick. And yeah, this is the kind of losing streak where you're like, I don't know, it might happen. They might just have no option than to get rid of him if they don't feel like trading three players away, which I'm going to get to that. So you got, like, this is all going to tie together, okay? It's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm of hellishness. So you got your losing streak. You got your 322 points. You got your offense cold, you got your goaltending terrible, you got your coach on the hot seat, you have a good coach, he's on the hot seat just one second year in. That's bad enough, right? That's bad.
Uh-huh.
But that's almost like standard, that stuff's gonna happen. Then then you have Carlson money drama, like getting asked these uncomfortable questions because like Drew Doughty said something in an interview, and he's like, well, if I don't get paid, you know, I'm dipping. And I'm like, oh, well, that's exactly what we all want to be thinking about, you know, 1 year removed from, not even, a few months removed from like almost going to Stanley Cup final. You got this Turris trade, the owner didn't want to resign, but the GM did drama. And you're hearing shit like Hoffman and Brassard and my beautiful firstborn son, Jean-Gabriel Pageau, are available. This is fucking not good. This is really teetering on a cliff. What could be worse than this? I don't know. Maybe the owner threatening to move the fucking team on top of it? Man, this and he insults the fans, right? Like, I thought about after that losing streak, I was like, how the fuck are you supposed to motivate yourself to go out to Canada to, like, go see this team that just got their asses handed to them by the Buffalo Sabres, then your man Melnick's on TV, like, straight up insulting the fans. And I gotta say this, I talk that shit about, like, being a football fan and, like, signing up for more pain. Like, this is like, black, like, Norwegian black metal hell version of pain. That was just, like, a few weeks.
it was such a slam dunk, this game, this, you know, 100th anniversary of the league. You've just sold 35,000 tickets at, I'm assuming, you know, pretty high price.
As far as I understood, they started at $250.
Right. So I, even if like a bunch of that goes to the league or whatever, I don't know. Like you, talking about a barometer of the market, you got 35,000 people outside in minus 20 degree weather who have all spent at least $200 to be there. And it's such a slam dunk from a, this is the point. I'm working on a bit of a thesis here, so indulge me, okay?
No, well, you haven't indulged me at all so far.
So,
thanks for being a friend, by the way.
As we know, I know you, and you're my friend.
Is that true? What you said earlier? I agree that we know each other.
So, I'm a big sort of like non-fan of the like the strength of the hockey narrative, and all that doesn't make any sense after I just said it, but let me explain. People are looking for like some kind of like master key or something that's going to explain everything. Hockey is like basically meaningless and everyone's writing about it all the time. So they're constantly looking for ways to talk about it that's going to make it super meaningful. And Ottawa just went through this like hellish losing streak where they were basically like 4 or 5 wins away from everyone being like, oh, that was a mediocre stretch, and nobody panicking. You know, like, If 3 or 4 of those games had been overtime losses instead of losses, or if a few more of those games had been wins, people would be like, that wasn't great. Here we are sitting at 500. But like, we wouldn't have this like false panic of being like, well, we're second last in the East in a league where basically everybody's fucking tied throughout the entire year. Mm. I mean, they're 10 points out of a playoff spot. That's not great, obviously. It's also December.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, there's a shorter amount of time almost from like when they were last in the playoffs to when there are playoffs this season. Like there's, and we're already like, well, their season's done. And like, you know, mathematically it's, you know, likely that their season's done. But the narrative of total disaster to just mediocre 500 team is like 3 or 4 games.
They're like a couple of points behind the two teams ahead of them in the standings, and I can't believe it. Like, I can't believe they're not in last after what I just saw. Like, wow, the NHL is like a mess, right? Like, there's other teams also doing this right now, apparently.
And I mean,
Montreal.
So in the last couple of days, I've read so much like amazing in-depth content by people about Melnick and his finances. There's an awesome post on like Sens Chirp about his about the value of the team. You know, like the Globe and Mail wrote this gigantic piece. The Citizen has been putting out a piece like every single day. You know, the Athletics got stuff out. Everybody's weighing in. There's some guy, Keith Olbermann or something. He's like he's got 1 million followers on Twitter, and he just like tweets at Trump all day, like calling
him. He's the leader of the Antifa.
There you go. And he's like weighed in on
this. He's like Keith Olbermann. Just to explain it before you go on, he is there was a TV show called Antifa, and it was written by Aaron Sorkin. go ahead.
He did strike me as like some kind of like VH1 host or something version of the Resistance. Like if VH1 was like the Resistance behind the scenes, he seemed like he would be that guy.
He made fun of the boy Adnan on his old show. Shout out to Adnan.
I'm revealing the like depths of my ignorance about Keith Olbermann apparently, but he's got 1 million followers and he's weighing in on Eugene Melnick. The point I'm trying to make is that it was such a fucking slam dunk for Melnick. All he had to do was be like, it's a special night for a special town and a great team. Thanks for being here, everybody. That's it. That is it. And the narrative is reset. If anyone's like, how do you feel about your team playing poorly? You just need to be like, you know what? What better time to reset the narrative than this beautiful night at this game in front of all these incredible fans? Just be fucking gracious for a second, you know? How did he go to, I'm not going to waste all the money I made in another industry in another country? Like, how does his brain go there?
Bruh,
surrounded like, by like the all of this like amazing stuff brought together for an outdoor for like the magic of an outdoor hockey game while it's snowing.
Yeah,
and he's like, I'm not gonna blow all the money I made in the fucking pharmaceutical industry on this garbage in front of the media. Like it's so if you have an owner whose like brain is not apparently rotting, and you have the team winning two or three more games in that losing stretch, we're writing the same articles we've been writing about how Ottawa is a bubble team and we want to see a plan. But instead, we're getting this like the collective influence of all of hockey media weighing in all at once on this being like crisis mode for the Sens.
Oh, I completely agree with this. It's like I'm not trying to equate these two moments, like in their horrificness, but it's like Donald Trump going to honor the code talkers from World War II, and it's like just go up there and don't insult First Nations people, and you know we're good. Like, just like, like these poor old men who were like an Iwo Jima. But anyway, so no, it was just like just go up there and don't insult the fans who just paid $250 or more to go stand in the frigid weather for hours.
Can I, so one big mea culpa here for me, those jerseys look fucking great. They look awesome. I was definitely, you know, I wasn't like, I wasn't hating on them, but I definitely wasn't a fan, and they look fucking awesome.
You put Eric Hussein Carlson in one of those things. It looks great.
Well,
I have a if your opinion turned on the jersey in that game, I want to deliver my hot take about who my opinion turned on.
Please.
Is Melnick has his moment. Just go up there and say, you know, like this is great for. Yeah, well, you go up there and you're like, well, Canada is Canada, and hockey is our game, and we just want to say thanks to the fans out there. And, you know, like, whatever, slam dunk, right?
Uh-huh.
Melnick goes up and he's just like, this next song's called Me Fans of Stupid Pigs or whatever. And then who else but Gary Bettman, of all people, swoops in like an archangel and is getting interviewed. And they're like, what do you think about Melnick saying he's going to move the team? And he's just like, bro, he can't do that. I'm his boss, basically. Like, can we not listen to the ravings of this, like, idiot? And he actually laughed. Like, the fifth question of the interview was about, like, the actual game. And he's like, oh, great. Let's talk about the game. Like, in a super sarcastic manner. I was just like, man, even Gary Bettman is face turning on you, Melnick. Like, damn, just fucking retire from whatever you do.
I mean, that was the weirdest thing. Is like, I was like, okay, I see what's happening in Calgary. I saw what was happening in Edmonton. This has got to be some kind of like leverage game, right? Like, if you say, look, I don't know, like, we're not selling out games, and it's the capital of Canada, and it's a hockey team that had some success last year. Maybe there's something wrong with the market. If people don't come out, and if I don't get concessions from the city, maybe we'll move to Houston or something. I get that as, like, your threat, your power move. You try to get leverage. But, like, immediately Bettman undercuts him. Like, yeah, you can't just move the team. So, like, it got him no leverage whatsoever. you know, Calgary's been talking about relocation constantly. And how does Melnick, or how does Bettman react to that? He says, yeah, you need to give him money for a new arena. So, like, Bettman, like, is on board to be the villain. He does not give a fuck about what
people
think. Every fan boos him at every draft. He hands out the Stanley Cup every
year. He just keeps going back out and handing out that Stanley Cup
every year. He does not care. He does not care what people think. I can't imagine what people say to him when they, like, he walks by them on the street. Like, he is fucking bulletproof at this point. He does not care about being a villain if it means it's going to make a lot of money for rich owners who he answers to. So, like, him coming out afterwards and being like, yeah, Melnick has no idea what he's talking about. You can't just move. It needs to go through the board of governors. It's like, he's throwing Melnick under the bus. All of his bosses are like a bunch of billionaire assholes, right? They don't care about being bad guys. They just need to be like on strategy in terms of like, how do we like take money out of these like idiot fans' pockets as quickly as possible and out of city coffers so that we don't have to pay for our arenas. And like in Calgary and in Edmonton, he's shown that like he will show up, he will get up in front of the TV cameras and say, this team is going to move unless you give this billionaire $500 million to build an arena. He does not care about how ridiculous that sounds. So for Melnick to be like, I will move the franchise, and Bettman to be like, yeah, he can't do that. He's got like, Melnick is an idiot, man. Like he has a bunch of other supervillain billionaires who he can go and like strategize with. And he just didn't. He just went up and had his like verbal diarrhea. Completely fucking ruining like a great night for like the league and for the local team. I mean, the game was awesome. It was a bit, but it looked awesome. So like, you know, it wasn't
a spiritual night. It was like a great night. He destroyed it.
And I mean, we have to obviously, Abdi starts the whole fucking thing. Melnick out.
Abdi, you're the greatest. Keep doing what you're doing out there.
I don't know how he does it, man, because like he did, there was that hashtag was not couched in joke. It wasn't like a strategic retweet with the hashtag. All he wrote, like a beautiful piece of music, it was just hashtag Melnick out, and then he just watched. And it was awesome. It was really amazing.
That's like, that's the Abdi Omer difference. He's smiling and laughing, but he's not playing.
this thing that he tweeted on December 16th. He just tweets it out. Melnick out, stands back, watches his beautiful child take its first steps out into the internet, and now it's basically should have its own. It probably has its own Twitter account.
Hey, if Danger Flutes has one, real heads recognize Danger Flutes. I do. We talked about Norwegian, true Norwegian black metal level of hell, or as former Supreme Court Justice Chet Sellers called it, Geo Hell, recently. we can talk for a minute about how that game was a spiritual victory. You know,
2-game win streak.
Fucking Jean-Gabriel Pageau, like, hater-ass deflection. I was at my shrink recently, and they prescribed for my crippling depression 20 viewings of that Bobby Ryan goal per day, and it's been really working on me.
God, can you imagine it happening to a better, like, I got nothing against Jonathan Drouin, but there's nothing better than like the Montreal Canadiens trade for their like beautiful boy Jonathan Drouin to be their new top line center. They've got a pretty decent center in Galchenyuk.
Is he a center? No one knows.
And they play him on the wing all the time. They just think he's terrible. They give away a defenseman who immediately turns into an awesome defenseman for Tampa. They bring Drouin in, and Drouin
down one goal in front of all his people, loses the puck to Bobby fucking Ryan, whose hands, like, who hasn't been able to, like, feel his hands since, I don't know, November. It was a thing of beauty.
Like, I don't want to go too far in on this, just kidding. He not only loses the puck to Bobby Ryan, he decides to go one-on-one with Bobby Ryan as last man out of the zone. Come on, man. Aren't you, like, a top three draft pick? This is the dumbest thing he could have done. Anyway, also, like, Ryan throwing the shadiest move on Carey Price. Like, that backhand fake, woof.
Yeah, he looked great. He's looked a lot better lately.
And the winter, what is it called? The NHL100.com presents Active Green and Ross Outdoor Extravaganza game.
Yeah, that's right.
It finally answered the question. You know, like, a lot of people have been asking this. Is Erik Karlsson getting hurt enough when he blocks shots? I don't know. And then we drop the temperature down to minus 20 and watch Erik Karlsson writhing in pain as he comes back to the bed. I was having a beer. That's right. In public with Steven, who used to be on the Scotchcast, RIP, but Angel Soar High to our old podcast, who's beloved contributor to our blog. And before the game, he was very concerned about the goaltenders playing in that kind of cold, which is valid.
Right.
Because they're just standing there. But, man, watching – luckily that all turned out fine. But, man, watching Erik Karlsson block some of those shots and the amount of extra – like, NHL puck, I don't know if you know this, they come out of a fucking freezer that's, like, in the penalty box. And that's why, you know, you hear the, like, loud crack every time, you know, the puck gets passed anywhere other than – Raleigh, North Carolina.
Are you shocked by how quickly we went from Karlsson will obviously re-sign here to people talking about trading him?
Oh, I've missed all that. Listen, I've been checked out for a minute. I don't need any of this.
It's not. I don't think any of it's serious. I think they asked him for his no trade list, but. And they've never asked him for that before. But on the other hand, he's also never been going into the last year of a giant deal before. And they also asked everybody for their lists. Like, I don't think it's anything to be scared about. But it happened fucking quickly. It happened really quickly. I mean, there was the comment after Doughty, which is totally fine to be like, I am going to ask for what I'm worth. And then there's like Melnick being a bit of an idiot.
A bit,
yeah. To be charitable, a smidge of an idiot. There's the losing streak, where, I mean, it does raise an interesting question of like, okay, if the Sens don't make the playoffs this year, and do you go into the next year being like, it's all or nothing, this is the year, or do you say, okay, like, we got to rebuild, and can they? Do they even have the money to do that? But, you know, those are questions that are fair to ask, but, like, everyone really pushed in their chips, right? You can really see when the national hockey media gets involved, people who, like, don't really talk about Ottawa that much are suddenly writing about Ottawa every other day, then you know it's like we're getting into some fantasy hockey stuff where everybody's just imagining Karlsson on their team. But I was surprised by how quickly it happened. Like, I thought he was just a lock.
The Ottawa Senators. What was it that you just said? next year's the year. Anyway, sorry. I was just thinking about that. Well, you win some, lose some. You put up 3 points out of a possible 22. You start asking for trade. I don't know. I got other stuff going on in my life right now, and I've been getting your telegrams, everyone. Thank you. I opened my phone one morning to the 27th 5-0 loss in a row, and I was like, I can't really take anything else on right now. I'll be back, but I don't need to hear about why James Myrtle thinks that Erik Karlsson would be perfect for Austin Matthews wing or whatever thing that, who knows? They fucking win a few games in a row, everything shuts the fuck. But we spent the whole first half of this podcast talking about how horrific everything was going. Of course, the media is going to focus in on that. They're waiting for something crazy to happen, but I think because of the amount of coaches they've fired over the last few years, and the quality of Erik Karlsson, the performance the team put on last year, I don't think anything crazy is going to happen. I think that really, we're not out of it yet. They've won 2 games. since it just kind of feels like, oh yeah, that's what winning felt like, they were kind of winning 1 game a month for a while.
That'll make anyone question whether or not your team's still even technically a hockey team.
Look at the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, that happened to them, and then they were national news, and everyone's talking about, are the Oilers going to rebuild again, or, kind of thing, after being cup favorites a couple of months ago? It was definitely our turn there. We'll see how it goes. I just felt kind of skipping it because I don't know if you've been on this website, twitter.com, but there's some less than optimistic scenarios that people to focus on. So I thought maybe I'll just hang back for a minute and see what actually happens. And, I'm glad the team doesn't have to play on the road for the next 3 weeks. So that's where I'm at.
You think they can pull this out and make the playoffs?
I don't know.
Is that a dumb question?
I mean, I looked at the standings before we linked up. Is that the right terminology here? And I was, like I said, I haven't looked at the standings in a while because I was just assuming the worst. And I was like, I can't believe they're only a handful of points away from third in their division still with games in hand.
It's at that point in the season still where the swings in playoff probability are super huge. I'm looking at the playoff probability, sports club stats website. And you've got these moments where it's like Ottawa is sitting at 31% chance of making the playoffs at one point. Then they lose to Winnipeg and they go down to 20%. So it's like a 10% drop in one game. And then, they go up a couple of percentages while they're not playing. And now they're sitting at 9.5% chance. But in the course of 3 losses, they went from a 60% chance to 32%. And then in one loss, they went from 30 to 20. So I don't know if, that's basically in a 5-game stretch, they went from a 60% chance to a 20% chance. Is it possible that in a 5-game stretch, they can go back from a 20% chance to a 60% chance? It depends on what's happening in the rest of the standings. It depends on where they sit in their division. But it's still super early, and Craig Anderson hasn't been himself so far. I refuse to believe that this career better than average goaltender is suddenly terrible and will remain terrible for the rest of the year. Duchesne's looked pretty good. It's not manifesting in points yet, but he looks fucking awesome. And Carlson's been playing like crap, so until recently. So if you have like Carlson, Duchesne, and Anderson all returning to form, you know, the team I think could get back into contention in like 4 fucking months. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and like a few years ago, if you asked me, can they turn this around, I'd say, no, absolutely not. They're done. But yeah. In the meantime, I have seen the team win like whatever, like 22 straight games to make the playoffs by like 1 point on the last game of the year or whatever. Like, so I'm just going to shut the fuck up and like hopefully the last few weeks of the season never happens again.
Here's what I'm hoping is going to happen.
Oh yeah, please go ahead.
I'm hoping that this is like the like moment of clarity of being like, we need to make what it is an obvious change to a lot of fans, but seems like an earth-shattering change for the team management. Okay. And trade a player like Cody Ceci. If it took this scare, it took this like really big, like if it took the team loses a bunch of games and suddenly everyone in the world starts writing articles about how they have to trade Carlson. And then suddenly the GM is answering questions every day about Carlson and you realize you might lose him. And then the owner loses his mind and suddenly like there's a grassroots movement to like out the owner. And all this is happening because the team went on a losing streak. Like, if that's enough to be like, okay, we need to play our best players in the top 6 and finally trade Cody Ceci and maybe play Carlson with Clayson and, you know, just play our best players the most, then it'll have been worth it, you know, because it seemed like Boucher was comfortable just running the same. I mean, Cody Ceci is playing like between 22 and 25 minutes a night.
I know.
That's weird, man. He's terrible.
Man, there are whole games where I'm like, Cody Ceci did not have one good shift tonight. Like, or like, even I like to go to games and whatever companion I am with, I like to say, watch when Cody Ceci does something good. Like, he takes the puck away from whoever, attacking forward from behind the net. He will instantly do something twice as bad right after. Like, he steals the puck, you're like, oh my God. And then before you even say, like, that was good, it's like on somebody's stick on the other team and like in the back of the net, or at least a scoring chance off of it. Like, I think you gotta strike while the iron is, you know, this is a large adult son of Canada who is 23 years old. He's a right-hand shot defenseman, and he can play over 20 minutes a night. Thank you for your service. We will take, you know, a second round pick or whatever. I would roll the dice on whatever right-handed defenseman we have in the system. I think shout out to Chris Weidman. Chris, if you're listening, I think about you all the time. Right-handed defenseman who's good. rest up that leg, buddy. I really feel like that guy's injury screwed this CC thing big time. I think Christian Yaros is the next right-hand shot defenseman in the system, and I don't know very much about him. So
I think for me the most like soul-crushing moment over this last period, it wasn't Melnick's comments, because that, you know, begat Melnick out hashtag.
Also a customary thing. Like, he kind of does that like once every 1 or 2 years, like threatens. He insults us and he insults fans. You know, as a fan, I take it personally when he insults me and my, you know, brothers and sisters. And whatever persuasion out there, when I just paid $200 to sit in literally the last row in the corner to watch the Sens lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the third round of the playoffs last year. And he's like, we're not getting the support we need out here. Like, I'll fucking burn your garage down.
Yeah, I think the national media was a bit like, oh, this is unprecedented, right? And a lot of Ottawa fans were like, he does this on Toronto sports radio constantly. I don't know why this is surprising. But for me, the soul-crushing moment wasn't just the owner going off or anything after the Duchene trade. There was one shift in the game against Buffalo where I think it was like Derek Pouliot or somebody stepped up to Sens defensive line. He's got Derek Brassard is guarding him. He skates around Derek Brassard. Like it's kind of nothing. He's got the puck on his backhand. Dion Phaneuf, who he traded for because he's this, you know, he's big and experienced, stands him up at the line and he just like skates around Dion Phaneuf like it's nothing. Just completely disproving that what Dion Phaneuf supposedly brings to the game is like frightening or anxiety inducing. You know, he's skating full speed at Dion Phaneuf and he just goes around him. And then at this point he's outskated Brassard and he's skated around Phaneuf, who was just standing there. And he's bearing in on Mike Condon, and Cody Ceci tries to pick him up on the play.
I like where this is going.
Uh-huh. So Cody Ceci is, you know, to be fair, has his own assignment at this point, because Dion Phaneuf has completely blown his assignment.
It's so, Cody Ceci's assignment at this point, like say no to drugs or something.
Yeah, he's slicing orange slices or something, and coach puts him out there again. And so he sees Pouliot coming in on Mike Condon on his backhand. So, like, under the worst of circumstances, like Pouliot bearing down on Mike Condon with nobody taking him, you'd like to think that Mike Condon can make a save against a depth forward shooting the puck on his backhand.
Yeah, I have no idea who this is that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think he was a depth player in Edmonton for a while, and now he's in Buffalo. Couldn't hack it in Edmonton. Now he's in Buffalo. So anyways, he's coming in on Mike Condon, puck on his backhand. Cody Ceci tries to pick him up, kind of like lazily does one of the dangling, like, doesn't take the body but reaches out with the stick, which just immediately, you know, risks all kind of deflections and all sorts of stuff. So Cody Ceci just doesn't really leave position, manages to get in Condon's way and put a stick in the lane. And then Pouliot shoots a puck backhand through Condon. So this depth forward on the worst team in the East outskated Brassard, Phaneuf making $7 million a year, Ceci, and then our goaltender, which we just locked up for 3 years. And it was just the most backbreaking thing to watch in the world. It was just like, we are fucking like just holding on for our lives against Buffalo. Like, at least we could say we were going to win this game in Buffalo, right? And the team just looked like, this is Ottawa. Ottawa's been through some rough fucking years, man. We've been through like bankruptcy. We've been through like record-breaking losing seasons. We lost Alfredson. We've been through a lot. And like, I don't know if I've ever seen a bench look more deflated than after that. Because it was like, you know that they're going to, like, Boucher's going to run Phaneuf and Ceci out there again. Like,
yeah,
half the game, they're out there.
Has there ever been a player punished less than Cody Aloysius Ceci?
Or even like Phaneuf at this point is, you know, like he's getting older, he can't skate. You know, I understand you don't want to like take a vet and punish him or something, but man, I really don't think Ottawa can do much worse by like running Clayson out there. Like, Clayson has been a healthy scratch lately. That feels weird to me.
Like I said, I would roll the dice on whoever is in Binghamton at this point. Like, I really... I mean, I noticed that Cody Ceci's on a bit of a hot streak. I do like how he's scoring those, like, Mark Borowiecki-level goals now where it's like, off the stanchion, off the referee's butt, and, you know, like, past Pecorine, you know, like, a garbage goal and an impressive goalie or whatever. Like, it's like, oh, we're never going to get rid of this guy, right? Like, he's gonna score, like, 10 goals by the end of the year, and they'll be like, well, maybe he is good. Like, he won't put up 0 points. Like, well, thank you for that. I just want, by the way, to just go back to the spiritual win outdoors. Thank you, my beautiful son, Jean-Gabriel Pageau and Bobby Ryan. But, and to also to Nate Thompson, you know, fan favorite. is that in that game, the greatest gift of all probably would be that the scum wearing that toilet seat uniform, the Canadiens fans, didn't even get the chance to cheer for anything the entire night. Like, not even so much as, like, one of those stupid, like, there was a fight and, like, whoever falls down first. Like, you don't even actually have to get your ass kicked. You just actually lose your balance a bit faster than the other person, so you lose the fight. Mm. They didn't even get that. You know, like, there wasn't even, like, a big hit or anything. But yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah, I think that was, like, so badly needed. I think everybody in Ottawa, I can't speak for everybody in Ottawa, but I will. Okay. Was, like, secretly
I wish you would.
I think we all were dreading a scenario where everybody in the league would come into our city and we'd be covered by national media and everyone would be paying attention and our owner would shit all over the market and then we would lose, like, 9-0.
Yeah.
Like, the Habs are a weird fucking team. They're kind of terrible, but they've also, like, I think they beat, I can't remember who they beat recently. They beat somebody, like, 10-0. They've had a couple of games where they've, like, really blown people out. And
yeah, they're terrible.
Yeah, they're terrible, and then they have these, like, weird spurts of, like, scoring 10 goals every once in a while.
I say that as a Sens fan. Like, I feel like the Habs are terrible because I'm an Ottawa Senators fan, and I look at the standings, and I'm like, I see you, Montreal. You know? Like, yeah, we're right there, though. Yeah. Like, we may have just got 3 points out of a possible 22, but I see you. We got games in hand on you. You know, we got you on site. And they're they are 3 points ahead of Ottawa, and we have a couple of games in hand on them. So that's hilarious. And that'll show also, you. I mean, they were the Ottawa of a couple of months ago, were they not?
I mean, they've been, like, Mark Stone was scoring, like, a goal a game, and he's been pretty quiet lately. So, like, yeah, you know, he's regressed a little bit, but he was scoring at, like, a crazy, crazy pace. So, like, you know, like, if he's still got, like, he's still having an amazing season. Hoffman's been a little bit, like, quiet. You know, Hoffman goes through these periods where, like, he doesn't score for 4 or 5 games, and then he just, like, makes it look incredibly easy.
Yeah,
like sniping from, like, behind the hash marks or something. Mm. So, like, you know, the team still has the pieces to be decent.
Plus, the Carlson baby is on the way.
That was an adorable fucking video.
Yeah. What do you think that that baby is going to be named?
Hmm.
Isn't there some kind of Swedish name that's like Hawkman or something? Like Hawkman?
Hawkman Carlson?
Honestly, Daniel Offerson named one of his kids Hugo, which is that's a flex. And then there's Phoenix with an F.
Yeah, I'm loving how like quickly everyone on Twitter went to like laying claim to Erik Karlsson's unborn baby as like a depth forward or something.
Immediately
we're like, I can't wait.
I'd take a flyer on him. I see you. Hey, did you happen to see any of the alumni game? Do you want to get into that at all?
Oh yeah, I did watch it. That was great.
It was on Rogers Community 22.
Yeah.
Which to everyone on the production staff that night, I just want to say, I have a great year next year in grade 12. You're going to do so good. I know that exploratory class is hard and you don't know the like software to put on a television production or to run audio of any kind, but like you did a pretty okay job, like C plus, good luck in future endeavors, Rogers staff. Like, okay, this is what I have to say before we get into actual fun of the game, because I have to ruin everything, is that I can't, like, I know that Rogers has broadcasts of Ottawa 67's games on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
That may look a little dark lighting-wise, but it's a perfectly reasonable hockey experience.
Mm-hmm.
Got Dave the Voice Schreiber in the mix, friend of the podcast. that thing was infuriating to watch, especially because it was, I wasn't there, but it was like the surroundings were beautiful. And I was watching it on like a shaky handy cam where they couldn't even show like a second angle until the replay of anything. Like it was rough. And every like interview with a player was just like, I'm like, man, these guys are dying out there. I can't believe Sportsnet didn't even pick this up. Like,
it's definitely
Sportsnet East or whatever. Like, couldn't take this.
It was definitely pretty bad, but I have to admit that I was charmed by the whole thing. But a couple of things. First of all, you know, I have like, as a person who lives in California, who's a Ottawa Senators fan, I like paid a bunch of money to be able to like stream games anywhere. Ooh. And every once in a while you'll like log on to the website that you paid all this money for and they'll be like, oh, that's blacked out.
Yeah. And
you're like, oh, okay. Like that defeats the entire purpose of like what this thing is, but sure. And then I was like, am I even going to be able to watch this fucking thing? Like, it's going to be some kind of like regional Canadian broadcast, like exclusivity rights. And I Googled watch Ottawa Senators alumni game. And the first thing that came up was a live YouTube video from Rogers Cable 22. No ads, no like create an account, no payment, just like a YouTube video of an alumni hockey game on Parliament Hill. So I just want to, like, it was definitely like super dark and there was no there was no production values to speak of, but it was super accessible. I got to watch Alexander Daigle score 4 fucking goals.
I got to watch Denny Vial and Chris Neal go in on a 2-on-1. They didn't score, but like that is a thing to see. That was something to see.
I got to see Pascal Leclerc get lit up. Like, it was definitely, like they weren't marketing the shit out of things because I guess they can't. Like, it's on Parliament Hill, so you can't like be trying to tell us about like the Toyota-thon or something at the same time. I don't think there was any ads. Like the whole thing was like charmingly,
you know, like I'm watching it on a computer and I turn to like my American wife and I'm like, here's all of the most amazing players to ever play for my favorite hockey team playing on the lawn of our fucking like White House.
Yeah, that was cool.
And yeah, it's on local like cable access, no ads, like nothing. It just, it looks like it's shot on camcorder. There's something kind of charming about that.
The most charming thing for me was the player introductions, which were, it's an alumni game. You got to like,
yeah,
you know, kind of go into it a bit where you're like, you know, Darcy Lowen led the Ottawa Senators in penalty minutes for two seasons or, you know, and they had to do that in English and French. Some of the players were kind of distinguished, you know, and I remember watching the player introductions and then the national anthem, and I was like, that took 55 minutes. introducing, you know, like Daig, then Yashin, then Alfredson, like Phillips, Fisher. Like, it took a while to get through. And they, you knew that was going to kind of be better than the actual game you were about to watch. So,
the super fun thing. The super fun thing for me was, I don't know how they decided who was going to play where, but you have, so Alfredson didn't retire that long ago, like a few years ago now, right?
I watched him play in the Juno Cup last year. I'm like, look, he might have a really well-deserved gut, but like he will fuck you up. Like he'll fuck your weekend up.
Like, not that long ago, he was, like, a productive NHL player. Mike Fisher retired, like, last year. So Mike Fisher, for all intents and purposes, is still, like, a depth NHL player. And
Mike Fisher doing Pilates, like, every other day.
And he's playing on a line with Alfredson. And then you've got Daigle in there playing, like, he's been playing in the Swiss League for, like, I don't know, like, 20 years at this point or something. So he's still playing hockey. I don't know who decided who was going to play where, but it was super funny to see basically like what could pass as an NHL line on a really bad team playing against like some super, super old dudes. And it was like the team that's like, that's stacked is the team that's playing against Yashin. It was just super funny to see like the black team get totally destroyed and have it be Yashin's team. And then, just, like, someone being like, we got to put Alfredson on a line with Fisher.
I just want to say that Lance Pitlick played in that game. Lance, if you're listening, I have your autograph still. He used to live in my friend's basement.
All right.
I'm not joking.
I feel like there's a story there.
There is. My friend's dad knew him somehow. I think it was college, but the age thing doesn't really match up perfectly there, but I never really asked questions. But Lance Pitlick, when he was playing for Ottawa for a minute, lived in their basement. And yeah, he was in that game. And his son plays in the NHL now, I think. But anyway, time is a crushing wheel that will destroy us all eventually. That was fun. And how about them uniforms though? They looked fucking awesome.
It's so fucking weird to see like the alumni game uniforms are better than anything the main team has worn for God, I don't know how long, but maybe not better than like the white Heritage jersey. That thing's fucking beautiful.
Or just the Heritage jersey is dope as hell.
Yeah, that's true. Next year, if there's one thing Melnick could do to repair the damage he's done over this last week, it would be to be like, okay, fine. Heritage jersey, white and black. We've been paying attention, and we know you want it.
Marking that down to never happen now that you've said that out loud. All he had to do was go out there and say the great night for the sport of hockey, and big thanks to our tremendous fans for coming out and braving the cold weather to enjoy our team in this beautiful setting.
Done.
Just go out there and don't insult First Nations people. Mr. President. I think that's probably fair. that's a good amount of podcasts, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm going to pause and then use the bathroom, and then I want to catch up with you.
Okay.
Actually, here. I'm gonna...